So I'm Chris Retz.
I'm Jack Mottman.
And this is Three Blind Drinks. And we are sitting here with Luke Ford.
Hello. Say hi, Luke. Hi there.
Hi, Luke.
I'm here.
And we are in Luke's lovely home in Encinitas, California. A beautiful neighborhood, bright, sunshiny day. And we are going to, as you know, drink three whiskeys that have been blinded for us. And we're going to talk about what we taste. And we're going to talk with Luke and get to know him a little bit. Luke. Yes.
Wait, hold on. Should we pour the first whiskey?
Should we? Okay. Yeah, let's do it. Let's pour whiskey number one. So this is probably overstating it, but I'll just say as Jack is pouring that this one looks kind of like cherry syrup or something. Like it's very red, right?
Yeah, it's got a crazy red hue to it, mm-hmm. especially when you put it up against the others.
Yeah.
And Luke was tossing out ideas just by the looks of these whiskeys. And this one he said was probably what, Luke?
Well, I'm thinking it's some sort of sherry cask finish, or maybe like a wine cask, like a port wine cask something.
Something that accounts for
something that would leach into the whiskey, that kind of color.
Mm. What do you guys smell in that?
I'm so suggestible. Like after looking at it, I'm not going to be able to think of anything other than cherries.
But oh, really?
I'll try it.
Ooh. Nice, ooh. Nice silence while we all smell. Mm. Luke.
Yeah.
I've known you for a while,
uh-huh.
but I don't actually know. How did you get into whiskey?
So I grew up in Detroit, right outside of Detroit, and started working in bars and restaurants when I was a kid. And then I didn't really like booze until I was about 21. Like, you know, you could go to Canada when you're 19 in Michigan and drink, but I would drink like the nastiest stuff, like just because I didn't like the taste of alcohol. So I would drink Canadian Club and maybe ginger ale, and I didn't even like that.
Yeah.
And then I would drink Bailey's and cream, like add cream to Bailey's. It can't get more disgustingly sweet than that. But
I think
that's horrible.
Sounds, yeah.
I think but that then, sounds delicious.
Yeah. And I was skinny. How is that possible? I don't understand it. And I don't have diabetes yet. So yeah,
that's good.
No, but I started working at this Irish pub and, you know, Jameson was all the rage even back then. It was like when it was first coming to popularity, and that was such an easy, approachable whiskey.
Yeah.
Still is. I mean, that's why it's probably in its like major heyday right now.
Yeah.
But you know, Jameson was the entry whiskey for me. Like I could drink it as a shot, you know, with everybody as camaraderie and stuff like that. And then, you know, you could put it in a highball and it was, you know, easy to drink.
Yeah.
So Jameson was really the whiskey that kind of drew me to the category.
Mm-hmm.
But then when I moved to LA, I wanted to get like a proper bartending job. I had bartended in like lots of, you know, divey bars and pubs and never really made a proper cocktail. And then I discovered this bar in downtown LA called Seven Grand.
Mm-hmm.
And I hounded the manager to hire me. Mm-hmm. I like just went in there every week for a few months and gave him my resume. And we finally sat down and he gave me this like really intense interview about just trying to like basically like, you know, weed me out. Like you can't handle this.
This is going to be so hard.
You don't even know what you want to get into.
Drop and give me 20.
Yeah. And, you know, I told him I like Jameson and he kind of laughed at me.
Yeah.
You know, there was like 300 different bottles of whiskey on the back bar.
Yeah.
It was a whiskey bar, like no other. And so, once I did get the job there, I started to just dive in. And, then I discovered there was this like, whole other world of different styles and flavors and so then that's when I just started to like really get nerdy about it and just fell in love with all the different categories and what makes it every different style so unique. And so it was really Seven Grand is where I fell in love, but I would say Jameson was kind of the gateway drug.
Nice.
It's like, I mean, it's not uncommon. We've had a couple other people say the same thing. Like Jameson was the one that was like, okay, I could like this.
We've heard that a lot. Yeah.
Yeah.
Jack, am I allowed to tell my Luke story on air as it were?
Sure.
Okay.
I think it's funny because Luke doesn't know the story. So like you're going to hear it for the first time.
So this can, we can turn this into a question.
Before like any of this, enjoy in moderation. Yeah. I don't promote such drunken behavior.
Agreed. Not, yeah. Concurred. So we can turn this into a question. And I just want to say Jack and Luke are tasting.
Are we tasting? I was smelling. Oh, no. I'll taste. Okay. Yeah. I'm going to take a look. You go ahead.
Well, maybe we can pause.
I don't know what I smell. It's like,
I'm going to do a little tasting.
Yeah.
So I don't know what I mean when I say brine, but I'm getting a little bit of whatever I mean when I say that here, but it's not super forward. It's just kind of on the back end.
Oh, I like this whiskey.
I think it's definitely sherry cask or like some sort of wine, you know, wine cask finish. But I can't tell because I've been fooled so many times now, like I can't tell if I want this to be a bourbon just based on color.
It's not bourbon.
It's not bourbon,
no.
Right?
No, it's a scotch.
Okay.
And why do you say that, Luke?
It's definitely got the malted barley coming through.
Hmm.
It's got a lot of heat on the tongue, and that could just be because it's my first sip of the day, which, you know, and I also had pizza a minute ago. So, and that's the thing about tasting whiskey is that it's always going to taste a little bit different.
Yeah.
And, you know, you guys know I work for Woodford Reserve, and whatever we taste Woodford Reserve, even myself, you know, drinking it almost every single day, it always tastes like something new to me.
Oh, that's crazy.
I mean, it tastes like Woodford to me, but then I always taste like, oh, you know, today I'm really getting the fruit notes of it. Or, you know, today, like whatever I ate is really affecting it and it tastes real spicy to me today or something like that.
Interesting.
So safe to say, Luke, probably by far the most experienced whiskey drinker we have had on, on the show thus far.
It's possible.
I'd say it's likely. Okay. Barley, considering it's one of four.
What do you mean when you say barley?
Barley is a grain, and whiskey is basically the broad definition of whiskey is that it's grain alcohol distilled and then aged in some sort of barrel. Distilled grain alcohol that doesn't turn into neutral alcohol, so there's still flavor, so it retains some of the grain characteristics in the initial distillate, and then it's aged in some sort of vessel. So for most scotch whiskeys, well, especially single malts, if you say single malt, that means one strain of barley that's been malted. And so when you malt barley, you just basically begin the germination process. You get it wet, and then it starts to, you're tricking the grain into thinking that it's going to germinate and sprout, so it starts to send these fermentable sugars into the stock. Then you stop that fermentation, or you stop that germination with heat. And then the old way of doing that would be to dry the barley over peat fires, which is, peat is an organic material below the ground and it's a good fuel source. So, when we talk about smoky whiskeys, which I definitely think there's a little bit of smoke in here.
I would agree actually.
Smoky whiskey. So you dry that malted barley over a peat fire, and, the smoke from the peat actually embeds itself in the grain and translates all the way through distillation and into the final product.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's delicious. I agree. Like, this one's really hard for me to nail down, tasting note wise. I'm not really sure what I'm picking up, but it's delicious. And it's also, it kind of tells a story a little bit, it lingers on the tongue and kind of changes.
This
whiskey.
You do.
I definitely do. I just can't, I've had this whiskey.
So I will tell a brief Luke story and end it with a question since this is all about getting to know Luke. So I went out one night for a few drinks. Jack and I are both big believers in the idea of drinking slowly and not drinking to excess. However, this particular night, for whatever reason, a conversation fell to Luke Ford. And
it's because we were at Sonny's.
Oh, yeah, right.
Sonny's, the bar
Highway.
Okay. Sonny's Highway, great bar.
Yeah, okay. Wonderful bar.
And is that a bar you worked at or a bar that you've just been to a lot?
It was a bar I frequented for a good season of my life, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So maybe that's why when we mentioned Luke Ford, the guy behind the bar, and I think this happened at more than one place, I have to say. We mentioned the name Luke Ford and the guy behind the bar is like, oh, really? Let me show you what I've been working on. <Uh-oh>. And then proceeds for the next like hour,
yeah,
40 think, minutes
yeah.
to like set things on fire. And he's yeah. like bringing out the oregano oil. And he's like, dude, he's like, so here's my, and so the end of that story is I, drank way too much and ended up losing my wallet. And so this is my context. This is my background.
I feel to blame for that.
But I did taste some really interesting concoctions. Here's my story. Why were all those guys trying to impress me when I mentioned your name?
Yeah, I don't know. this industry is very close. The industry mm-hmm. that I'm in, yeah. Not just whiskey, but bartending. And it really is a global community.
Yeah.
And I was very fortunate to have some kind of bigger roles in the industry. So it kind of more of a spotlight, I guess. But I never really thought of myself as being like worth impressing.
It's so funny to me because like I knew you when you got that job at Seven Grand. It's like, you're just my friend, Luke. Yeah. You know, it's just like...
I didn't know anything. Yeah. And I still, you know, there's still a lot to learn. Yeah. I mean, I'm always learning.
I think the thing that I'm always so impressed by you is that you have a great palate. Like you really, truly do taste things that I don't taste. You always are able to like pick something out that I'm like, he's right. I had no idea. You know, I just think that's, that's amazing.
Well, I mean, I remember you brought over that. The first time I had Templeton was with you.
Oh, yeah.
That was a fun night. We drank like almost the whole bottle.
Yeah.
We were like, wow, this is fantastic.
Are you like, because I get a little bit of shame about liking what now I consider to be kind of not a great whiskey. Like Templeton went through that whole thing where they didn't label the bottle right. And there was all this. Ooh. I mean, you probably know more than I do. But like they did something wrong. People really backlashed against them. And so now they have to label it slightly differently.
Right. The whole thing though is just that the backlash that they got is so like, you know, unjustified when you consider how ridiculous the whole industry is.
Mm-hmm.
Like because they buy their whiskey from a third party.
Yeah.
And they say they're, you know, this whiskey from Iowa. It's
right. Just like, yeah.
That's, you know, where the backlash came from.
Right. But right.
It's the same thing with so many other brands.
Hmm.
There are hundreds and hundreds of whiskey brands on the market right now. And I mean, specifically rye, that category is, it's kind of a joke that there aren't more people getting, you know, slapped on the wrist
right.
or getting called out because it doesn't happen. But like, if, it shouldn't be a stigma. It shouldn't be an issue.
Right.
It just is the way it is. So it's like not just because they bought it from somewhere else doesn't mean it's not good.
And it doesn't mean they didn't do something interesting to it once they got
Absolutely,
it.
Absolutely. Yeah. So that really frustrates me, but you know, the rye category itself, I mean, most of the rye category is
really
third party.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And there's two major producers. There's a distillery called MGP, which used to be called LDI. And it's, MGP stands Midwest Grain Producers.
It's in Indiana, right?
I believe so. There's two big facilities. And I think the main one that makes the rye is in Indiana. I could be mistaken. And then there's a big distillery in Alberta, Canada that makes a rye whiskey that has seen its way into the U.S. in a lot of bottles.
Huh.
Which, no harm, no foul, right? So, like, why not just open it up, I think is what you're saying.
Yeah, and like, you know, if, as a consumer, if you like it, like it. If you want to ask questions, ask the tough questions. I don't think these big companies are out there to like fleece anybody. They're not trying to, you know,
right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Trying to make something people like.
Yeah.
It's great. I think this is
Bowmore.
What's that?
I think it's Bowmore.
Okay.
Like could be way wrong.
Okay.
And that makes sense to me, the color, because Bowmore is like very red. Like every time I see it in the store, I take note of that.
So I mean, I think it's Bowmore? Maybe the Bowmore 15.
Okay, I'm gonna work off that, and I'm gonna say it's Dalmore.
Ooh,
because don't they use the food coloring, whatever it's called, E41 or E51 or whatever it's called.
I don't know what they do with it.
But there's some whiskey in the whiskey circles. There's some like snobbery about who uses this color and who doesn't.
Oh,
and I think Dalmore is known for using it.
Okay.
And their stuff is very red. Like
so
that.
Bowmore and Dalmore,
yeah.
Two words I've never heard before. Yeah. What are these whiskeys?
Bowmar's in Isle of Whiskey. So it comes from an island off of Scotland. And
Scotch.
And they do, they still do peated whiskeys. So they dry the barley over peat fires.
I wonder if the peat thing is the thing that I'm latching onto when I say brine.
Yeah. No, that's also, brine is definitely, did somebody say that you were wrong for saying that?
No.
Because that's not, I mean, that's definitely a real thing.
Yeah.
That's
absolutely. I mean, we talked about brine because you had Talisker, and Talisker is a very briny.
Lots of brine, But you can get that in any of the island whiskey. You can get that in any whiskey at all. Yeah. I mean, there's no wrong answer. But yes, the brininess would definitely indicate that it's like an island whiskey because there's lots of that sea salt air and that's making its way into the barrels.
It just seems so romantic to me, the idea that the that this whiskey is made on an island and that the sea salt air is somehow making its way into the beverage.
So cool.
For some reason, makes me want to drink it more.
Absolutely.
Now that it's gone in my glass, I'm picking up the smoky. I'm picking up the smokiness a little bit more.
Yeah, I was just going to say, after it sat for a bit, I feel like the smokiness is becoming more apparent to me. Mm. And I don't think that's suggestibility. I think that's actually me. Yeah.
It's very delicate. It's very nice. Like, it's not the reason I think Bowmar is because, and I could be totally way off.
Which would be great. That's one of our.
I called Redbreast a bourbon two episodes ago.
Redbreast is great. I could be way off, but the reason I think that is because it does taste like it has that, a little bit of that smokiness, but it's not overwhelming. It's still very delicate.
Yeah.
And that's what I remember kind of, I mean, it's been a while since I've been like regularly drinking scotch, but this kind of has that, it triggered that memory for me of that nice, delicate, but still a little bit of that smoke.
Yeah.
That's what I'm getting. Mm. It smells great.
Yeah. I just kind of want to live in it.
It like, does.
It's really nice.
It's a very, very appealing whiskey. Mm. It's not like, it's interesting, but it's not like super interesting to the point where you're like, what am I drinking? Like, it definitely still is pretty straightforward and approachable, but it's interesting and delicious, in my opinion.
Yeah.
So instead of calling each one number one, number two, number three, we like to name each one.
Okay.
So
red delicious.
Red delicious.
Oh, I love it.
Yes. I do like that.
That's great.
It's an apple.
Apple seems to come back every once in a while, and probably not because the whiskey tastes like apples.
Yeah, that's
remember?
True.
Because like we had one that we said tasted like the green Jolly Rancher, which was, you know, doesn't taste like an apple, but is called apple.
Right? Yeah, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, like the idea of an apple.
Red Delicious. I love it.
Okay.
Yeah.
We settled on Red Delicious.
I like Red Delicious a lot.
Also, one of the most distinctive aspects of this whiskey is just the color. Crazy color. Red color. Yeah. What do you guys think about, I'm sure we should be moving on, but what do you guys think about a company, a distillery coloring their whiskey? Does that rub you right or wrong, or do you not care?
Well, it depends on what style of whiskey it is. I mean, for Scotch whiskey, you're allowed to add certain colors, and it doesn't necessarily affect the flavor. Mm-hmm. If you're going to make bourbon whiskey, you better not. You can't.
Okay, cool. So because it's
illegal to put any artificial any color or flavor that didn't come from distillation of the barrel, or just, you're only allowed to put the whiskey in the bottle.
Right. So there's regulations about what can go into a bourbon.
Bourbon is one of the most heavily regulated spirit categories in the world.
Wow.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. It's pretty cool.
You guys want to move on?
Let's move on from Red Delicious, which is in fact delicious.
There you go.
Oh.
So Jack has just poured number two, which could not be a whole lot more different in terms of color than the Red Delicious. This one is very yellow, right? Wouldn't you guys say?
Yeah,
almost like a really light urine color.
Yeah,
that's it's like you are very hydrated.
That's right. Like you didn't have to go.
If this is what you're peeing, you're doing a good job.
Yeah, right? You're drinking the right amount of water. Yeah, so almost transparent. Mm-hmm. But yeah, very yellow.
I will be very the one to say that this is briny.
Yeah, I was
this
gonna
one.
Say,
this is like this is the brine you've been looking for.
It is.
This,
as you have a Han Solo shirt on.
I wore the shirt for you.
I love it, dude. Yeah.
Are we all Star Wars fans? Is that the
too much? Yeah. Yeah.
Good. That's great.
We saw that. This is irrelevant, but we saw Captain Marvel last night.
Don't tell me. Okay. I can't wait.
Okay. I figured I was really curious if you had seen it.
No, I was in New York all last weekend and then got back. I wasn't like, kind of under the weather the last couple of days. I'm feeling great today, but man, I'm dying to see it. I might go tonight. I don't know.
Time like fun. The present.
It's a really fun movie. I won't tell you anything about it. It's just we had a good time.
What if we pause the podcast, go see Captain Marvel, come back, drink the rest of the whiskey while we talk about the movie. Smell wise, what are we, briny is what we're saying. Anything else?
It's,
I get that Band-Aid type of thing. Like iodine,
which is not antithetical to the brine,
kind of,
right?
Yeah, another kind of in there together.
Yes, like Band-Aid
almost. Yeah,
yeah.
I'm excited.
There is a sweet something in there, but I can't quite.
What is it? That's crazy that actually works. But I totally agree about the Band-Aid thing with the brininess. What is that? I don't understand. Is it the plasticky type of like rubbery thing?
It could be anything, man. There's there could be part of the yeast, the esters coming off of the fermentation. Who knows? Mm. I mean,
that's some hoity-toity description here.
Yeah. So fancy.
So fancy.
I saw a great meme the other day. It was Sean Connery's face, and it said, "I sprayed Febreze." I sprayed Febreze in my bathroom. Now it smells like citrus.
It's delightful.
Meme culture reaches 3 billion drinks at last.
I'm excited about this. I was looking at the colors, I was worried that these were not ordered good. Like I was worried, especially after tasting the first one. But did you taste it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
Yeah.
What a unique thing.
Is that a good thing?
Go
ahead.
The Red Delicious, I was like, it's interesting, but it's not super interesting to where you're like, holy cow, what did I just... And this, I would say, is in that direction where it's like, whoa, what's happening?
Man.
You feel like I'm having, like I've had this before feeling.
I feel that way, but I feel like this is a familiar taste, but also it's like a familiar brand, but not a familiar selection.
Okay.
Does that make sense? Like it tastes like an expression of something that I've never had before.
Yeah. So it's peaty, right?
I'm definitely getting the smoke. Yeah. Which now I'm confused about in my head, the relationship between peat smoke and brine. Like I wonder if they're not.
Those aren't necessarily related.
Yeah, so I guess I'm a little confused about what it is that I'm picking up.
So the peat smoke would be getting into the barley because it's literally the smoke is penetrating the barley stalks, right? And that's where all that smoky peat flavor, there's no other interaction with peat.
Okay, got it.
So then the briny, sea salt type of thing is coming from literally just sitting in proximity to the ocean.
Yeah.
And so you have that.
Interesting.
Like if you walk outside here, you're going to smell the ocean air.
Yeah, for sure.
Live 5 minutes from the beach.
Yeah.
But you go inland, the air is a totally different expression. So those barrels are sitting close enough that that actually does make an impact.
That's amazing.
This, though, I mean, something.
Are we thinking another Isle Scotch? Isla Scotch?
I mean, this could be something strange. This could be like a peated Indian whiskey or something.
Oh, interesting. I really wanted so the whiskey review channel that I watch on YouTube, they did, what is it? What is it? It starts with an A. The Indians.
Amrut.
Amrut.
Yeah.
And I'm really curious about it because it's one of the, it's number one selling whiskey in the world, I think, just because India is huge and it's really popular. Mm.
This could be something like that. It's throwing me off.
Crazy. It's delicious. I really like it.
It's aggressive on the nose, but very soft on the palate.
Yeah.
It almost just falls off.
Yeah.
Soft on the palate. Exactly. Yeah, totally.
It's very slicks. Smoky right away, and then it just kind of slowly goes.
Dissolves.
Yeah.
Yeah. Red Delicious, I felt hung out for a little while.
Red Delicious likes to hang out in
and kind of change on you. Yeah. Like you think it's one thing and then it kind of shifts on you a little bit. This one is kind of one thing, which is really interesting. And then it kind of just dissolves.
I mean, it could be,
which is an interesting like experience.
It definitely, I do feel like it's a Scotch, but it could be some sort of world whiskey that was trying to imitate the Scotch style.
Yeah.
Mm. Or it could be like, you know, Isle of Skye or something. It's like real delicate.
Yeah.
It's definitely not very old, I would guess.
Mm. Is that because of the alcohol?
I would guess because of the color. It's just so colorless.
Yeah. Sure.
So it probably
almost transparent.
Yeah. It may be like a 10-year.
So Luke, I'm very interested in Seven Grand. Mm-hmm. Is that the name of the I'm showing how ignorant I am of Los Angeles nightlife culture, which is kind of sad insofar as I've been living in Los Angeles for like 12 years. I would love to know kind of, I assume Seven Grand is like super well-known bar, right? Mm-hmm. A lot of like the LA elite showing up to like party there or whatever. What was it like working there?
It was a beast. you're not wrong in that it has really blown up. It's become like a very recognizable brand. The guy that started it is this really great businessman named Sed Moses. Okay. And he owns a company now called 213 Hospitality, which is the area code for LA.
Oh, nice.
But he's since expanded that brand in particular, Seven Grand, to San Diego after it was his second one. Then he's got one in Austin now, in Denver. And then he owns about 15, 16 other bars in LA. Hmm. But working at Seven Grand back in the day was like crazy. It was about 10 years ago when I first started there. And, we had tons of celebrities through. That was no, surprise.
Yeah.
I think the coolest person we ever had was Prince, and he came in.
No way, dude. That's cool.
I did shots with Shooter McGavin, and we did the finger guns. It was pretty cool. I made drinks for a lot of famous people, and that was a lot of fun. But like, it was also just a beast. Like, it was crazy busy all the time.
Super tough.
I mean, that's really when whiskey was exploding. I mean, it still is, I guess, but it's like
and the cocktail movement. It was like Mad Men was huge. Yeah. Everybody wanted to drink old fashions and Manhattans and drink rye. And we were six deep at the bar all night, every night.
Wow.
That's 7 days a week. And,
You wouldn't be there 7 days a week, would you?
No, I mean, I would work, 5 to 6 days a week.
Wow.
I was there for almost 5 years. And, I put my time in as a barback. Everybody has to start as a barback. Mm-hmm. And then moved up to the management position after, a little while. And then it was, a bar manager for a while. And then I got the opportunity to go work for a brand. So I was ready to transition out of those hours.
Yeah.
Sure, man.
Yeah. So
would you just spend like your day off just like passed out for like
pretty much it was like a 12 couch hours. Recovery day. Yeah. Order pizza and just like
I'm interested. So like my experience that is tangential to yours, but also nothing like yours is that I once made Ed Harris's drink wrong at the Starbucks in Malibu. I'm wondering if you...
Did he get all Jackson Pollock?
It was kind of funny because he was like, oh, you made my drink wrong. And I was like, oh, I'm really sorry, sir. The standard spiel, like I'll totally remake it for you. And I think during the course of me saying that sentence, he saw that I realized that I was talking, that I was talking to Ed Harris. And then he was like, never mind.
Don't worry about it. Really? He bailed?
Yeah. And he took off, which who can blame him? Right.
That's funny.
So he took that poorly made drink like a champ. I'm curious, do you have, because I have some nostalgia, low level as the Starbucks mixology is. I have some nostalgia for like making something that's artistic for somebody else, that kind of like personal interaction that goes down between like you as somebody who's making a beverage and the person on the other side of the counter. Like, are you nostalgic for that at all?
100%. Yeah. Okay. It comes in waves, but fortunately I'm still like involved.
Yeah. Right.
So a lot of the times I do get to have that kind of interaction with guests every once in a while. It's few and far between now working on the brand, especially like legalities are really weird. So
sure.
We have to like literally own the party and there could be no cash transaction.
You know,
But like I do get the opportunities from time to time to like create new cocktails and actually cool. I do a lot of creating new cocktails. It's just not actually creating them for customers like on the spot most of the time. But
yeah. Is it creating cocktails for the brand?
Yeah, we do a brand development. I like 2 weeks ago, I had to go out to Palm Springs and work with the Marriott out there with our national accounts manager person. and I got to spend like 4 hours with their entire staff and kind of give a bartending 101 seminar and then dive into cocktail creation and R&D and all that stuff. So that was a lot of fun.
Wow.
And seeing like young bartenders are like really eager and being able to share like something that I think is just like, you know, so old hat that like is like, what? You know, like people are like, whoa. I'm like, wow, I didn't know that that would be such a hit.
But that's just great. Blowing some young minds out of the water.
I think that's awesome when you can take something that you are actually like, you have mastery at and you can just like share. Like, I think that's really fun. Like,
totally.
And maybe it's our age. We're all roughly the same age. And it's like, you've been doing whatever you've been doing for probably about 10 years.
Sure.
You know, like, and you have that ability to share that with someone. I think that's really, it's gratifying for both parties. Like, it's cool to learn. Like, I still love learning, but like, I love to be able to like, cause I edit for a living or motion graphics. And it's like to show someone or to like, to be like, oh, that's how I would do that thing. And then people look at you like, I would never have thought to do it that way. That feeling like you were just describing is just for both parties, I think is so gratifying. It's I have the idea and you want to know the idea. That's really cool.
Yeah.
I get so excited whenever I get to hang out with our master distiller because there has not been a single encounter that we've ever had where I haven't been like, whoa. So it's all, like that feeling of,
It's like a whiskey prophet.
It's incredible. He is like, our master distiller, his name is Chris Morris, and our assistant master distiller, Elizabeth McCall, like two of the most badass people on the planet. And every time I sit with them, I'm just dumbfounded by their like encyclopedia brains. It's just ridiculous.
Yeah.
Well, that's great.
Yeah.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
Do you think, okay, I'm asking both of you, do you think you need to have an encyclopedic brain to be at that level? Like, is that a necessity if you're going to be like master distiller or like, you know, director of a movie or like leading a big ship?
Yeah.
Do you need to have an encyclopedic brain?
I think there's room for, you know, dead space in there. You have to have some, like, you have to have the ability to, you know, like Chris, I think he does have an encyclopedia type of brain.
Mm-hmm.
But he's one of those rare people that also has the ability to communicate it on the most basic level.
Oh, yeah.
So I think you need that. I think you need some sort of, like, and I have a friend, Scott, who works for NASA. I think you've met Scott.
Oh, yeah, I think I have, yeah.
And he's one of those people, too. And they're very few and far between, but you meet someone like Scott or someone like Chris, and you know that inside their head is just like this crazy vortex that you can't possibly understand.
Yeah.
And they know it. But, and then they can articulate it to a similar brain and be as crazy and high level as they want.
Yeah.
But then he can sit there and in 5 minutes explain to me some crazy thing that they're working on and make it seem like I understand what he's talking about. When I really don't, but he can break it down so that I understand. And then, you know, being the leader of a ship or having that, you know, that the weight of that, I think it is important to be incredibly knowledgeable, but I don't think you have to be like a savant.
Yeah. I think that's a great point because like when I was leading a team, it was so easy to get lost in the weeds and be like, no, you don't understand. And then try to explain all the reasons why they're wrong or all the reasons why they're right. Like you want to praise them, but you get lost in the praising that you're explaining too much.
Yeah.
And then they're like, okay.
Totally overwhelmed.
Like, they're just, yeah. They don't care anymore because you've lost them. But that ability is very essential.
There's also the opposite issue. I have a, I don't even know what to call him. He's like the brother of my brother-in-law. And he is a mathematician. Mm. And this is kind of the opposite extreme. And whenever I ask him kind of what he's up to, he's like, I can't explain to you.
Yeah.
And I'm like, fair. That's great. I'm glad you're doing well. Yeah. That's good. Glad to hear.
Yeah. That's like the complete opposite where it's just like, I'm in my world. You're yours. Yeah. Right? Yeah. Stay in your lane.
You don't want to know what I'm doing and you can't grasp it.
I have that problem all the time where I'm trying to describe to somebody what my day was. And it's like, I moved some pixels around.
Yeah.
That's good. That's good. Every time, every single time, it doesn't matter what I have experienced. And at this point we have blind tasted 12, not counting this one. So this would be our 11th whiskey, right?
Yep.
Every single time, once it's gone, I get nothing but the kind of woodsy, oaky, cedary. That's kind of the only thing that I can
smell.
That's
all you get when it's empty?
In the empty glass. Yeah.
Interesting.
Although I do still, with this one, pick up the smoke for sure.
Yeah, this second one is fascinating to me. It's got some...
They're both really great. So yeah. I mean, it's making me, you know, second guess everything. Forget everything
that's great.
You thought you knew.
I want to point out that Luke took the care to not drink his whole glass so he could come back.
Right.
Yeah, that's the thing I like to do. Yeah,
that's how we know we're dealing with a master.
Yeah.
It's fascinating.
I, of course, have drained both of mine. And yeah, that's a great.
I just wanted to have something to compare.
Yeah, no.
Excellent. Excellent.
But I just went back to the Red Delicious there, and man, that one loves to hang out.
Yeah.
Yes.
Really does.
Yes.
It sits kind of like in the front up, like the front top of my palate and like the tip of my tongue. And it just, as I breathe in, it just kind of almost like you have a mint and like the cool air just into that kind of thing. It's the alcohol. It's just kind of.
Yeah.
Let's talk about context for a minute, Luke. In what context would you prefer a whiskey that likes to hang out? And in what context would you prefer a whiskey that kind of dissolves in the way that that the currently unnamed number two dissolves?
I think the hanging out ones, the bigger, bolder, like fighting around in your mouth for a while. I like those with other big things, like maybe like a cigar or a meal that has just tons of fucking flavor, like something that's just gonna go at it with each other. Or, you know, because I had like a big spicy meal and I had this number two whiskey, you know, it's just kind of, there's no point.
Should be like, where is it?
Yeah, I'm just getting drunk.
So maybe unnamed second whiskey for like times when you're maybe not having anything, where you're having whiskey. That's like the thing you're having.
I mean, yes and no. I mean, I'd still like to enjoy number one.
You like
just on its own.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. All right.
But maybe another practical application for number two would be to like, you know, help it out in a cocktail or something. I don't know. A lot of people hate making cocktails with scotch, but
yeah,
I think, you know.
It's such an interesting playground, I think.
I love taking expensive whiskey and making it into cocktails.
Yeah.
Even though people look at me like I'm crazy. I'm screw you.
It's fun.
I'm drinking it. One of our whiskeys is the Woodford Double Oaked, and it's a little bit more expensive and it takes a little more time to make and just care. Mm-hmm. And it's fantastic on its own, but I love making it into cocktails.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I drink old fashions with that all the time. Like, it's just going to make the old fashioned that much better.
Yeah.
Yeah. Making an old fashioned with good whiskey doesn't make a bad old fashioned.
Exactly.
For sure. Yeah. That's great. What do we think about naming this one? This individual. I was going to say this guy, but maybe it's not a guy.
It's almost like a, like when I smoked cigarettes, it was like that was when the colors meant something. Like, remember, like blue.
And they changed from light to like, they used to be called like lights or something.
Yeah. Like this feels like the light. This is like the Marlboro light or like the silver. Marlboro silver was like what they became or something like that, you know?
And it does have a good deal of smoke. So I mean, that's not altogether inappropriate.
Yeah. How about Camel lights? Because I used to smoke Camel lights.
Yeah, me too. I love Camel lights.
Camel lights, and then I was Parlor lights for a while. Then I was American Spirits.
Oh yeah,
and
because I wanted to be healthier.
No additives. That's fine.
And the color of this whiskey looks kind of like a camel.
Yeah, Camel
there
lights.
Yeah, yeah, like straw.
Camel light
color to it.
Like it.
Delicious and Camel light.
That's good.
Those are two great names.
We've been doing good on names.
It'll be, you know, Star Wars Day will be, I think, my fourth year without a cigarette.
Wow.
May 4th.
That's great.
Congrats.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
It's hard to stop, man.
Yeah. It's great. Greatest thing I ever did.
Really?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
I still really miss them every day, but it's like, I'm so happy I don't smoke anymore.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, that's awesome.
I was in Nashville not too long ago. My brother got engaged and, you can still smoke in bars.
Oh, really?
Huh. And I went to this bar and I grew up smoking in bars and, I used to love that. And when it went away, I was like so pissed off. I was like, how dare they infringe on my rights to smoke? And I can't tell you, it was the most disgusting thing. I mean, the bar was great. I had a great time, but like everything, it permeated every inch of my clothing. I had like a big coat on, like a winter coat. It was freezing. And I couldn't wear it I felt weird. I did wear it, but I'm like, I felt weird wearing it to my brother's engagement party because I thought people were going to think I was a smoker.
That's got to be in Nashville. That's got to be at least 50% about the performance, right? Like the performers at the bar want to have the smoky ambiance, right?
I wouldn't know.
I don't know.
All right.
I think it's because Big Tobacco lives in Tennessee.
Yeah.
That makes more sense. Yeah. That's good. I guess if they get away with it in Austin, they can get away with it in Nashville.
Yeah. Cool. All right. Let's do the third whiskey. Yeah.
Number three. Number three has been poured.
Whoa.
Okay.
New category alert.
Okay.
I think.
Oh, yeah. Sweet.
Now, I don't know if a whiskey has a traditional color, but I would say in terms of whiskey, this is probably the most traditional looking. What do you guys think?
Like when you picture whiskey, this is what you're...
It's kind of what I picture, yeah, like a
this
goldish...
This looks still a little light to me. Light to
it
me.
Is light, yeah. But so, not as light as what we're calling Camel lights.
Right.
Yeah.
It's not Camel light.
This is different.
Whoa, for sure. So when you smell this, what's the first thing that pops into your head?
Well,
this is definitely very different.
So I think that I've only smelled it right now, but I think just having nosed these two before, they're a little bit more aggressive. I think my brain just jumped right into the fact that there's probably a different type of grain in here.
Mm-hmm.
So that could be corn. It's probably corn.
Yeah. You're thinking bourbon?
Just on the nose after the two, which I'm assuming are, you know, international whiskeys, I would say that my guess is this is an American whiskey on the nose, but I could be way wrong. Let me taste it.
So I want to call it like
so vanilla
brown sugar. Or maybe it's vanilla that I'm picking up on.
Oh, wow.
We all know how suggestive I am.
Well, no, I might've been totally wrong.
But I can see the vanilla thing. I can see, like,
I have no idea. This whiskey just broke my brain.
Yeah, I totally had this whiskey before.
So when we were chatting with Matt, who is Luke's brother, the first whiskey we had, right, we called it the Deceiver. Because when we smelled it, we thought it was one thing. And then we tasted it, and we felt it was completely different. Is that kind of what's going on here?
Mm-hmm.
Or...
It could be a scotch again.
Yeah.
It could be a blended scotch.
Yeah, it smells.
It's so confusing right now after the other two.
Mm-hmm.
The more I'm sniffing this thing, the more the vanilla thing is just like totally crushing me right now.
Maybe that's why I thought corn, but I don't know if I'm right.
I don't think it's corn. I think it might be another scotch.
It's cloying.
Yeah.
It's like making my... Yeah.
Yeah. Like your tongue is like raising up yeah. and you're like, is that your first sip, Chris?
It is.
Man, this is, I feel like I know this one.
Yeah.
But I hope I'm completely fucking wrong with everything just so I can be like, all right.
That would be entertaining.
And I'll sue you guys if you ever air this.
Your reputation is moot.
Yes.
We had an episode recently where Jack was like totally Sherlock Holmes the whole thing. He was like, this is this and that's that and this is why and here's what it tastes like. And we were like kind of blown away by it. But we also like it when it's completely off, which for me it always is because I have no idea what I'm doing.
This has a familiarity to it. Dang it. It's like really frustrating.
So for me, the sweetness of this one just totally stays on my tongue.
Yeah.
Like I can still taste it.
Is it an Irish?
It's possible.
Should we mention that it's March 16th?
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Tomorrow.
Tomorrow.
And
that's
tomorrow,
probably what it is, Jack.
Okay. Think it's Irish.
It's probably that. Cause it's, I'm having an aversion to it.
Okay. Oh, okay.
It's like I'm not loving it. Mm-hmm. And to all the Jameson lovers out there, I do really respect Jameson, but mm-hmm. I have an unpleasant interaction with Irish whiskey in yeah. general.
Yeah.
And that's not to say that it's made poorly or it's not good. It's just that I think as I progressed in my own journey, I kind of shied away from it. And then also I had just plenty of really horrible experiences yeah. because, and that's like most people that have, you know, that lash yeah. onto a, yeah. an aversion to something it because was your, they drank lots of it yeah. and when they were young.
Yeah. It was your first whiskey, right? Yeah. So it's kind of like, it's natural as you grow and kind of become more sophisticated to move on from your first kind of love and find different stuff, right? Makes sense.
So every one of our pairings has a theme. And I'm starting to wonder about,
I don't know what this is. It's really throwing me off.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Sorry, what are you saying?
No. I'm fascinated by it. So I'm starting to wonder if like maybe Irish is somehow the theme in this. Because this tastes so much like an Irish. So I'm going back thinking, could those be? I don't think they can, right? Like
yeah.
I don't think the because no, Red Delicious is so, I mean, tastes like a scotch. I don't know if it is a scotch, but it really did taste like a scotch. But what that's making me think of is, do you know that whiskey? I think it's called Connemara.
Mm-hmm.
Don't they do a peated blend?
That could be the Connemara, the second one.
The second one.
And then maybe the first one is some, you know, other Irish whiskey. Are we all wrong?
The alcohol content of this one seems high to me. Like it feels like it goes straight through the roof of my mouth into my nostrils.
What if they're all Irish whiskeys and I was completely wrong? And that's, like you said, Connemara.
Yeah.
What if this is like Redbreast 25 or something?
Yeah.
It's like, and so it's just that crazy good.
Yeah.
But there's like that peatedness.
Yeah. The peatedness is in the very first one, the Red Delicious, is that kind of briny thing that once it sat,
mm-hmm.
that's kind of throwing me off.
Oh man. This is exciting. I didn't know there would be a theme.
Yeah. We like to spring it on you.
We like to toss a couple of left turns in there when we can.
I'm completely clueless now from the rest of the time.
So is the peated thing, is that pretty particular to Scotland? Is that something only Scotch?
There are other whiskey categories that peat their whiskey. It's just, it's predominantly Scotch.
Okay. So like I've been told that because peat is so abundant in Scotland, that's where the tradition started. Mm-hmm. And it actually still is abundant. So like you'll get American whiskeys that do the same thing where they malt the barley and then they need to dry it out.
Yeah.
But they'll just, peat isn't readily accessible here. So they'll use like, they'll use mesquite or something in Texas or mm-hmm. what have you.
Mm-hmm.
Same idea, right? Like they want to dry it out. So you get that different
Or just
smoke.
They won't have any smoke and they'll just dry it over like a malting floor that's heated with natural gas. And so there's no smoke.
Right.
I kind of want to use the word sour with this one.
Yeah. Even though, that's a great word.
Okay. All right. Cool.
I mean, fantastic descriptor. I think that goes to the cloying thing. It's like, it's bringing the,
on the sides
of my,
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yep. Totally. Absolutely.
That's where the sour is going to hit for sure.
But yeah. Is that the thing that's kind of making you think more Irish? Is this like kind of sour side of the mouth thing?
No, I don't know what I'm thinking with this one. Unless maybe the theme is that they're all island scotches.
Yeah.
And this could be a non-peated island malt, maybe like a, I don't know, but man, that's just interesting. This whole thing is interesting.
Wow, it's a mystery.
It's so fun to do this. But I'm also kind of like furious.
Why are you furious?
Just because I'm like, God, I should know this shit.
We're testing your limits.
That's great. This is exactly what we want. I don't know if we're titling these episodes, but we could call it The Fury of Luke Ford.
That's pretty good. The Fury of Luke Ford.
Again, like I'm at the end of my glass. Like I still have a little bit left. Yeah, but again, I'm only able to pick up oakiness at this point. Like I can't really smell anything else.
I would be shocked if the Red Delicious was anything but Scottish.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then the second one, again, I could see it being like an international category, but I would I would peg it as another Scotch whiskey if I had to. This third one is throwing everything off though.
That's such an interesting guess, like an international category that's trying to pretend it's Scotch whiskey, basically.
Well, because I learned that
mimicking the
you know, like Taiwan, right? Or like Taiwanese whiskey is really big. Mm-hmm. Like people are really excited about it. I learned that there's almost no rules in like Taiwanese and Japanese whiskeys. Like where, like you were saying, bourbon is hyper legal. Like Japanese whiskeys and Taiwanese whiskeys, there's almost no rules. So they could import half of their stuff, mix it with something and just call it Japanese whiskey, you know? So I wonder if something like that, or like you mentioned the Indian one.
I mean, Japanese whiskey is very well made for the most
part. Oh, yeah, yeah. I'm not saying it's not well made. I'm just.
But they're not doing what you just said, though. I mean, like they're producing pretty much. I mean, the big whiskey companies in Japan are making all their stuff like, very hands on.
They're
super meticulous. It's a big part of their culture to be like as disciplined as possible about everything they do, and they do not joke around with their whiskey.
Yeah, no, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to make
The fury of Luke Ford is upon you.
Yes.
Grudge match.
No, I don't remember the guy's name.
Jack Modman.
You'll know the guy's name, but he found the perfect climate that mimics Scotland in Japan. Like did all the research so that the seasons are exactly the same, so that he could like you said, perfect the craft.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's so fascinating. How long has whiskey, does anybody know how long whiskey has existed in Japan? Because I'm just learning of Japanese whiskey and it's kind of blowing my mind. Mm. But I'm wondering if that shouldn't be the case. If, you know, it's certainly feasible that the Japanese have been making whiskey forever, you know.
I don't know.
I don't know what the specific year was, but it's been around for a while.
Okay. It's certainly gained popularity recently.
It's blown up. It's it's probably the biggest like up and coming category.
Yeah. Interesting.
It's impossible. I mean, like they had such a boom. They just can't keep stock.
Wow.
So.
Wow. So we should all move to Japan and start making Japanese whiskey.
No.
It's not how that works.
But I mean, Beam Suntory has done a really good job with taking their inability to hit the market as much as they want, with like remarketing and coming out with some really good, like approachable, like the Toki, which is their like entry level Japanese whiskey. Mm-hmm. It's like designed specifically for highballs and it's just super easy drinking.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they went away from all age statements, which is going on in every single category.
Like, yeah.
No one's really, everyone's shying away from age statements for the most part.
Yeah.
Do you see that as being a positive thing?
I do. Yeah.
Because it doesn't matter, right?
It matters in the sense that if you do see an age statement, you know that by law that every drop in that bottle is that old at least.
Right.
But it does not matter in the sense that like just because it has to be that old doesn't mean it's any better than anything else.
Doesn't mean it's good.
Yeah.
I mean, there's certainly
a 55-year-old Macallan, which was insanely expensive, one of very few bottles in the world. And it tasted like I was sucking on a piece of wood. Like,
it was like, it's too old.
Yeah. It just like tasted like somebody put a piece of bark in my mouth and I was just kind of chewing around on it. I mean, it wasn't horrible by any stretch, but I mean, it's like,
But maybe not as good as
something else.
I mean, there's definitely a romanticism involved, right? In drinking something that's 55 years old.
Yeah.
Right. There's something that happens in your head that's maybe not happening in your mouth. That's like, wow, this thing took 55 years to make. Right. And there's, I mean, that's definitely a thing.
Yeah.
It's not value.
It's romantic.
Absolutely.
Whether or not it's good is
a totally different question.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, Luke is responsible for my only experience with 40-year-old scotch.
Wow. And what
do you remember what that was? You brought it to Thanksgiving. You bought a case of it because like the distillery was going out of business.
Oh yeah.
Do you remember what that was?
That was the North of Scotland, 1964.
It was amazing. I remember loving
it. Absolutely amazing. That was, definitely one of my favorite whiskeys ever. I still have one bottle left.
Really?
Yeah.
That's cool. Yeah.
Maybe that's another part of the romanticism or the mystique of drinking a whiskey that's 55 years old is not just, wow, this took a really long time to make, but also I'm almost time traveling. Like reaching back to a specific place. In a specific time in a way that I really can't feasibly do any other way. Mm-hmm. Right. Which even if it, you know, isn't a particularly fine whiskey is something valuable in and of itself.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, probably all the processes have changed, right?
Oh, sure.
Like if you're drinking a 40-year-old or a 55-year-old, the way they made that whiskey isn't the way they make whiskey now. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. It's time travel.
It's cool time travel for sure.
And like that, there's a lot of whiskeys that were pre-phylloxera, which was that like virus that wiped out like a ton of crops in Europe. And so like if you had like some of those whiskeys that happened or that were laid down before that happened.
Yeah,
absolutely. It's going to be different because that strain doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah.
You know, so the crops are literally different.
Yeah. When we were doing the wine tours in France, we learned that, I don't know if it's the same thing, but they had
wiped out all the grapes.
It wiped out all the grapes. And so the only way that it survived is they had to import grapes from California.
Wow.
So like this rivalry between California wine and French wine is like, it's the, I mean, yeah, sure. Climate, terroir and all that stuff, but like, it's still the same. Like you guys are trying to help each other make good wine. Like,
it's a bit superficial.
Yeah. It's a bit fake.
That's great. That's great. I love it.
Man, this third one is just driving me crazy.
What should we call it?
Sour Patch Kids.
Ooh. Oh, I'm so glad the candy related name has returned. I love it. I like that a lot too.
I'm wondering if this is a finished whiskey.
What does that mean?
Like it sat in a barrel that had something else in it. Oh man, it's driving me nuts.
So a finished whiskey, I guess by definition couldn't be bourbon, right? Because bourbon has to be aged in new barrels, correct?
Correct.
All right, I'm learning.
Unless you do what we did, which is make the double oaked, which is innovation.
Ooh, tell us about the double oaked.
I wish you could see the look on his face.
This is, we're bumping up against the limits of podcasting right now. You don't get the joy of,
these expressions are gold.
All right. Gold. So tell us about the double oak.
The double oak is just that we took bourbon and we were inspired by the Scotch whiskey makers and, you know, their ability to take whiskey and put it into lots of different types of barrels, including our barrels, which is the mostly what they use. But like being able to take an 18-year-old scotch and then throw it into a barrel that just had cognac in it or a barrel that just had sherry in it. And then being able to let it sit in there and kind of soak up some of that goodness.
Interesting.
That's what we call finishing.
Yeah.
It's also like what we've done is we've kind of circumvented that law for bourbon. And the law actually, all it says is that you have to use new charred oak vessels.
Okay. Got it.
Containers,
right?
Every time, so we're using two, new charred oak containers. So we make our Woodford Reserve bourbon as it is, and then we take that finished whiskey and we put it into another brand new charred oak container. So, and we finish it in there for another about a year.
But it's but it's a new oak container that has had something.
Never had anything in it. So we're using two brand new barrels. So
okay. Like, got it. Interesting. Okay.
So, hence the double oaked. So.
Right. That's okay. Cool.
Got it. That's awesome.
But yeah, the reason I'm struggling here is it tastes like a whiskey that I've had.
Yeah.
But it also has that like that funky aftertaste. And I'm thinking maybe that came from some sort of secondary barrel.
Yeah. Mm. Like they finished it somehow.
Yeah, but it's light, but it's not as light as Camel Lights.
What color Sour Patch Kid?
I don't actually like Sour Patch Kids.
So I don't know if Sour Patch Kids taste different. I think they have different colors, but they all basically taste the same.
Yeah.
Luke is tossing his head back. He's kind of swishing the whiskey back and forth right now. He's like legit tasting this thing.
It's such a familiar taste.
He's on the warpath.
I'm going to go on a limb and say they're all scotches.
Okay.
Okay.
I think that I was just completely thrown off thinking I was smelling corn or something sweet just because that third one is just sweet, but
it had that funky, strong vanilla thing going on.
Man, but maybe it's one of the other islands and it's a finished whiskey. That's gonna be my guess, but I can't put my finger on the distillery.
So okay. Just hedging the bets, I'm going to go that they're all Irish.
Okay.
I don't know distilleries except for the middle one. I think is Connemara peated. Uh-huh. I think this last one is like, I think finished makes sense. Like maybe it's a Jameson Caskmates or something where it's like they did something. Don't they put those in like beer barrels or something?
They do all kinds of stuff like that.
They do a bunch of different interesting things with Jameson. And then the first one, I'm throwing my hands up in the air. I have no idea. if these two are both Irish, then I think the first one has to be Irish. But I don't know what that is and I want more of it.
Should we choose a favorite? Also, what do you think about choosing a favorite philosophically, Luke?
Of the three?
Yeah.
Oh, I think that's fine.
Good.
Yeah, what's your favorite?
Number one.
Okay. Same.
I'm torn between Camel Lights and Red Delicious.
Okay.
But I think if like today I want to say Red Delicious. Like,
okay.
It's just interesting and it just keeps going and it's like, it's got my brain tingling.
I want to lock down number three so bad.
I'm like putting off, like stalling.
Oh, are we about to have the reveal soon?
Well, you know, we got to make a call.
Well, hold on. Don't do it yet.
Okay.
Just give me a minute to hang out here.
Yeah. Luke's trying to suss it out.
So cheers to Billy for arranging us an intriguing series of blind tastings here.
Yeah. Let's call him.
Let's give the guy a call.
I'm going to be so devastated. They're all Irish. No, I don't know. I think they're all island scotches.
Hey, Billy.
Dang it.
Hi, Billy.
It's going good. How are you?
Good.
How's the fantasy baseball draft?
It is actually tomorrow.
Oh, that works out.
St. Patty's Day.
It did. It worked out nicely.
All right. So we just finished the blind tasting.
All right. What'd you think?
You got Luke pretty upset. He's like,
exactly what I was going for.
All right, so I'm going to tell you the names as we do.
Okay.
Number one, we're calling Red Delicious.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Number two is Camel Lights. And number three is, I forgot.
Sour Patch Kids.
Sour Patch Kids.
All right.
So our predictions are okay. My prediction is that they're all Irish, and I know that number. I'm guessing number two is the Connemara peated, and that's all I know. So based on St. Patty's Day being tomorrow, I think that's what's going through your head.
Oh, that's good. Never thought of that.
Luke thinks they're all scotches.
I'm confused now. So I. She's not to.
He abstains. Yeah.
He's second guessing himself. I know nothing, and so I don't have a guess.
I've tasted all three of them at some point, so it's making me more frustrated.
Yeah.
Like, I just can't quite pin it.
All right. So what have we had?
Okay. So number one is the Glenmorangie Scotch.
Okay.
Wow.
It's, what's it? Oh yeah. Is that, that has a finish on it, right?
Oh,
Quinta yeah. Ruban, the port, yeah, port cask.
It is one of the ones we tried.
In That's
the,
funny.
In the unnamed episode that we'll never see the light of day.
Okay, it wasn't completely stupid.
So right. Luke has been redeemed. It is indeed Scotch.
Just on that one. Okay, let's all see right. how bad it gets.
What's Camel Lights?
It is the Glenlough Scotch.
Oh, Glenlough is.
From the Peated Cask.
Peated Cask. Oh, yeah, okay.
Wow, go. So spot on.
Yeah,
wow.
He was right on that one.
Yeah.
And what's number three?
It is the Nika Japanese coffee grain.
Yes. Oh. Yes.
So that interesting.
So much better. I'm not a complete moron.
So yeah. Interesting because we were talking about Japanese whiskey as we were drinking it, right? Yeah. So yeah. Wow, that's so interesting.
Oh, that was a great tasting.
Hence my confusion.
Yeah.
It was fantastic.
I'm gonna blame it on that. Glenroth is.
Oh, you just gave it away.
No, you said that. He already said it. Yeah. What?
Glengarry Glen Ross.
Oh, copy is for closers. I get it. Oh, man.
Oh, that's amazing.
That's great. I love it. Perfect.
Oh, thank you so much.
Anybody want to see second place? Second place is a set of steak knives. Third place is you're fired.
Whiskey is for closers.
Oh, that's fantastic. That's
great. Thanks, Billy.
Love it. Thanks, Billy.
All right. I'll talk to you guys later.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye. Wow. I got to say... So, despite I mean, your
that was a great little deceiving glass there yeah. because yes because it's made so much in the style of Scotch whiskey yeah. but it's so mm-hmm. unique
yeah
and it's made in the coffee still
yeah
so it's not necessarily exactly like any of these other two
right because yeah. isn't the coffee still an Irish innovation?
Anais Coffee is the inventor of the coffee still. I don't remember if he was Irish or. But it's a continuous still. I mean, it's yeah. basically how most whiskey is made. Yeah. So it's not like it's not rock science. They just named it after that.
Right. Guy. The guy that figured it out.
But a lot of Scotch whiskeys are still made in pot stills.
Mm.
So it's definitely like the nose is throwing me off. It's yeah. a lot sweeter. There's yeah. none of that peatiness.
Yeah.
But it sure. still tasted kind of like, I'm like, you know, it tastes like
yeah.
either Irish or Scotch or yeah. something. It's like, you know, it's not quite there.
Yeah.
So interesting.
Whew, okay.
That's great. Still,
I kind of know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's pretty impressive.
Pretty spot on, man. All right.
So the last thing to do is to add to our infinity bottle.
Ooh, that's what that is.
Yeah.
This is a mixture.
So the question is, what do you want to add to our infinity bottle? So far in there, we've got some Glenmorangie.
Mm-hmm.
We've got a bunch of other stuff. I've lost track.
Same. I have no idea.
From these or from my bar?
No. From
these. Past podcast episodes. Okay. Yeah.
I think you should put the Glenmorangie in there.
Okay.
Yeah, I like the Glenmorangie too.
All right, Chris. I mean,
there's
in there.
Already some in there, but
yeah. Oh, it's already in there. Then put the Nika in there because that's weird.
Yeah, the Nika is really yeah, interesting. It'll,
I mean, do you want to give it a sniff? It smells crazy.
Does
you want to try some?
It smells like kind of like root beer. You like the sarsaparilla?
Yeah.
Oh, it totally does. Like it's yeah. got that like vanilla-ness. Yeah,
that's
going
awesome.
On.
I love it.
You should make some malts with that. Yeah. You guys want to float?
All right. So clearly the Glenmorangie is the one you enjoyed the most. Which one do you want to add to our? Do you want to add more Glenmorangie?
I think you should switch it up and add the Nika.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Here yeah. you go.
And I'm going to drink these. Man, that was fun.
How much do you normally add to?
Perfect. Stop.
Good. Yeah.
There we are.
We're going to do two more episodes. Oh, that's cool.
You want to taste this now?
Get a splash.
Ooh.
I'm going to pour it in the Nika one. So,
what's the plan with that bottle at the end of all this for you guys?
We don't have one.
Auction it for $1 million.
I want a royalty.
Everyone that's on. Yeah. A couple bucks.
I have no idea what to say about our infinity bottle.
That brought it back, I think. That brought it back towards like the beginning. Like it's reminiscent of where we started.
Sure. It has the...
Are we still going?
If you want. Yeah. I don't know.
No, I think that's really cool. And there, have you guys heard of a bartender? His name is Jeffrey Morgenthaler.
No.
He's a pretty well-known bartender. Mm-hmm. So if he ever hears this, I hate to talk about him because he doesn't need any more ego. Hi, Jeff. Love you. He does this really cool thing at home. He just, you know, he had so many bottles of so many spirits because, you know, he gets sent them or you know, people bring them into his bar all the time. He doesn't necessarily have spots for them. So, I mean, as you can see, like I'm nowhere near his caliber. And I have like
tons of bottles,
100 bottles of alcohol. And so anyway, he just got fed up with having all these bottles and started to create his own house blends. So he bought all these giant decanters.
Oh, cool.
And so instead of having like, you know, this type of scotch or this type of bourbon, it's like he has this house bourbon and it's just all the bourbons going around. And like
that's
his
own
house tequila blend is just all the tequilas that he brings home. Wow. And I started doing that with Woodford.
Yeah.
And anytime I bring home a sample bottle I've been out with and it's got, you know, a little bit left, I just keep dumping in whatever Woodford bottle I had with me into a decanter. And it just keeps evolving and changing, but it's fantastic.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Great.
Any final thoughts? Chris likes to call this the parting shot.
Parting glass is what I've been calling it, which is appropriate this close to St. Patrick's Day. I have no idea when people will be listening to this, but... parting words. I have one ready to go.
Go, Chris.
Can I go first? Mm-hmm. I really liked what we were talking about while we were drinking Camel Lights in terms of taking the time to like develop your craft and then passing it on.
Yeah.
So here's what I would say. I would say figure out what you do well and then find somebody who wants to glean from you and pass it on. Mm.
A good piece of advice. I think my final thought is to like trust your gut. Like I think once I started overthinking the theme this week, I really talked myself into them all being Irish.
Sure.
And I think if I would have just trusted my palate, I would have been like, clearly those are all scotches.
Cool.
Well, they weren't, so.
But you would have been wrong.
Yeah, but you're right. Trust your gut. I mean, you got in my head. I was like, you know, convinced that these first two were definitely scotches.
Yeah. And
then having the idea of a theme in there just made me question everything. Final thought?
Yeah.
I think going back, you said something that I thought was really interesting about when we were talking about how, well, you both, we talked about it all, but how these older whiskeys can give you like a bit of a time travel feeling.
Yeah.
And, I just saw this show, Ricky Gervais just put out a new show. I think it's called Afterlife.
Yeah.
Have you seen that?
Mm-hmm. I haven't watched it, but I saw that.
It's pretty interesting. I mean, it's typical of him. It's kind of that really morose at times, but the dry humor. And,
yeah.
But he's also brings about this like really incredible touching moments in the show.
Sure. Yeah.
So he's got you laughing and then you're crying. And just like, oh. But there was a thing in there. It's not original, but he just brought it back up in the show and he's talking to this lady and they're talking about why bother to do good things for people or even give a shit about being a good person. Mm-hmm. And kind of to that point of that time travel and these things, you know, taking so long to make and age. And she says, there's like, it's an old adage and I'm totally going to get it wrong, but you know, good, like one of the things is that good people plant the trees of which the shade, they know they will never be able to sit in for the betterment, you know? So they know that, you know, you'll plant this tree knowing that you'll be dead long before it's even tall enough to provide you with anything.
Yeah.
But you do it because you know that it'll provide for the future generations. And not that whiskey is that level of, you know, romance. It's just, you know, the guy that made that McAllen 55 is surely dead.
Yeah, totally.
I mean,
yeah.
He was an old man when he made it.
Yeah.
He
yeah.
laid down that barrel knowing that he would never be able to taste it.
Yeah. Mm,
that's great.
That's amazing.
So, I mean, a lot of these things that age for so long and are made by people out of love and knowing that they'll never, ever be able to reap the rewards of their labor. So,
yeah.
Wow.
So cherish those older whiskeys and things that take time.
Yeah. That's great. Luke Ford, thank you so much for being on and thank you for having us in your lovely home.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us.
Yeah.
And drink slowly and get to know each other.